Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Buckle your seatbelts, conservatives. We have good, good, and good martinis to close out the week with a little follow-up chaser of insanity to go with it all. But we start with the first good martini, and it's actually giving genuine credit to Donald Trump for multiple things, mind you. As Jim led off with the morning jolt today, Donald Trump and Mike Pence are in Louisiana. They are not only the only people to react to the Louisiana floods, which President Obama and Hillary Clinton haven't even bothered to do, except for, I think, maybe one Hillary tweet, but they are actually on the ground. They're going to look at the damage. They're going to visit with people obviously affected by this, which certainly gives a not only a good visual, Jim, but also gives the impression that they care, which this ticket would probably benefit from. But also last night, Donald Trump, in his first speech since rearranging his campaign staff, was in North Carolina and came about as close to an apology as you'll ever get from Donald Trump about some of the language he's used during this campaign.
Sometimes in the heat of debate and speaking on a multitude of issues, you don't choose the right words or you say the wrong thing. I have done that. And believe it or not, I regret it. And I do regret it. Particularly where it may have caused personal pain. Too much is at stake for us to be consumed with these issues. But one thing I can promise you this, I will always tell you the truth.
There's a lot to unpack there potentially, Jim, because, of course, if these issues are that important, why did you spend so much time saying all these things? But it's the right thing to say. It's a smart thing to say, whether he means it or not, who knows. But you can already start to see perhaps the influence of Kellyanne Conway and message discipline here. The question is whether anyone's going to buy it at this point.
You know, Greg, let me answer this in Trump speak. I regret this bigly. I am filled with regret. Bigger, better, more amazing regret than you've ever felt in your life. I am the most humble person on earth. Everybody comes around to admire my humility because of how much I regret what I do and my boasting and my egotism. No, but like as you point out, look, we've wanted to see something in this neighborhood from Trump in a while. I think if he actually followed through on this, he would have a much better chance of winning this election. And we'll see if he can pull this off. Coupled with that, going to Louisiana this week is a really good idea. It's also very good for both. You know, it's a big deal when both candidates are in the same place. And look, there hasn't been any polling indicating that Louisiana is in trouble. This is Trump doing this because it's the right thing. Because by going there, he's attracting people, you know, getting the whole nation to pay attention to what's going on there. As we had noted earlier this week, the worst natural disaster in the country since Superstorm Sandy, a natural disaster that has been strangely lacking in national attention, that has gotten no public statement or official statement from the president. Yes, he signed the natural disaster declaration, but nothing on camera, no words or anything. Hillary put out one tweet. It's been a surprising absence of national attention there. And so kudos to Trump for bringing that attention. And look, it makes him look like a guy who cares, and generally that's something that's good to have as you're running for president of the United States. And because he kind of has this larger-than-life persona that hasn't really worked as well for him in the general election as he might have hoped, this kind of adjustment will work. I think it's kind of ridiculous to think the man's going to pivot and completely change who he is. He's 70 years old, but... Look, it works better than just, you know, sitting on Trump Tower and tweeting that the media is being mean to him.
On to the second good martini now, and this broke just about an hour before we recorded here. This was an email that just said Donald J. Trump's statement in the header. It didn't even talk about the topic in the title, but the statement is very short. Quote, "This morning, Paul Manafort offered, and I accepted, his resignation from the campaign. I am very appreciative for his great work in helping us get to where we are today, and in particular, his work guiding us through the delegate and convention process. Paul is a true professional, and I wish him the greatest success," unquote, Donald J. Trump. So, Jim, just 2 days ago when we were talking about the campaign shakeup, Kellyanne Conway was telling, I think it was the Wall Street Journal, that no, there's no buddy being demoted here. This is the core four now that we're all going to have together, and this is going to be a great team going all the way forward, which is, you know, probably what you need to say at the time, but everybody knows that they were essentially pushing Paul Manafort out the door.
Greg, talk about getting shipped off to Siberia. Maybe he got a better offer from Putin. I don't know. And or there's an FBI team knocking at the door saying, hey, we think you may have violated federal law on lobbying for foreign interests and not disclosing it. You're right. This is not an enormous surprise. The intriguing thing is that they kind of went through the idea of, no, he's totally staying on the team for about 2 days. There's one argument says this is bad news, that Manafort was trying to keep Trump on the straight and narrow, trying to keep him from going off the rails and you know, just saying whatever blurted into his head. Manafort wanted a more disciplined candidate aiming to appeal to a broad swath of the electorate. But I think the sheer weight of the allegations of just how deep Manafort's ties to pro-Putin politicians in Ukraine and other foreign interests were just getting really heavy and really serious. There are reports that Trump didn't like the advice Manafort was getting him. He felt like he was being stifled, that he was not able to be himself. The hiring of Steve Bannon made a lot of people interpret that to say, okay, you know, Trump wants a yes man. Trump wants somebody who will tell him he can be whoever he wants to be, trust his own instincts, and don't worry, you know, everything will work out fine. That certainly doesn't seem like the sort of thing Manafort was saying. The intriguing thing is, Greg, is that looking at our first martini, that wasn't the sort of thing you'd expect Steve Bannon to tell Trump to do. Apologize and show contrition, you know. Maybe Kellyanne Conway really is the going to be the more influential figure here. Then again, it's early. It's only, you know, late morning on Friday. By Monday, 14 other different things might have happened, including perhaps a Russian invasion of Ukraine. So maybe Manafort has another, you know, air quotes as I say, this campaign to manage on the other side of the world.
Wow. That's not out of the question, probably. There's a lot of Russian forces, a lot of Russian equipment massing over there. So
what could they be doing, right?
Yeah.
That's what the worst that could happen there. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, it is August. That's generally when Putin does his dirty work. During the Olympics, that's when he invaded Georgia. Back during the Beijing Games. I can't remember exactly when he went into Crimea, but I don't think that was during the Olympics. But he generally does it when people are distracted by other things, and this would be par for the course for him. On to martini number three that is also good now, and this is courtesy of Ed Morrissey over at Hot Air in reaction to the New York Times reporting on the FBI interview that was heavily redacted before being sent over to members of Congress. Pressed by the FBI about her email practices at the State Department, Hillary Clinton told investigators that former Secretary of State Colin Powell had advised her to use a personal email account. And so Ed says, let's walk this back one step at a time. According to an upcoming book from Joe Connison, Hillary had already started her tenure as Secretary of State when the conversation occurred, months after setting up the private email server and refusing an official State Department account. The conversation took place at a dinner party that also included another former Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright. And according to Connison, toward the end of the evening, over dessert, Albright asked all the former secretaries to offer one salient bit of counsel to the nation's top diplomat. Powell told her to use her own email as he had done, except for classified communications, which he had sent and received via a State Department computer. Now, today, General Powell has released a statement from his office. Quote, General Powell has no recollection of the dinner conversation. He did write former Secretary Clinton an email memo describing his use of his personal AOL email account for unclassified messages and how it vastly improved communications within the State Department. At the time, there was no equivalent system within the department. He used a secure state computer on his desk to manage classified information. The general no longer has the email he sent to former Secretary Clinton. It may exist in state or FBI files. For a complete discussion of his use of private emails, he refers you to Chapter 16 of his recent book, It Worked for Me in Life and Leadership, published in 2012. So a nice plug there in the statement for his own book.
Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. So not only did Hillary Clinton already do all this before she got this advice from Colin Powell, it's not exactly the full-throated endorsement that she claims that it was. And, of course, as we've pointed out time after time, he had nothing to say about a private server, so her scenario is not identical to his in any way, shape, or form.
As I wrote in the novel The Weed Agency about government employees and email, available at Amazon.com now. No. So one of the problems of getting older is that you remember things that nobody thinks are particularly relevant, but they do kind of put things into a different context. there was a time, if you're, you know, 1991, Colin Powell was chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and he is, the Persian Gulf War goes very well, and America really likes this guy. By 1996, he's retired, and Republicans are just begging him to run for president. He comes out with his autobiography. It's a huge, giant bestseller, and the expectation is Republicans are going to have the first, you know, major African-American nominee. Powell decides he doesn't want to run for president. Fast forward 4 years, George W. Bush is running for office. Colin Powell is a supporter, and Colin Powell, you know, agrees to serve as Secretary of State. And there's this belief that Colin Powell, even if he's not down the line conservative, is going to be this key and important Republican figure for a really long time. Kind of a central thinker and going to have a great influence on the party. Well, Iraq War happens. Powell has a big role in making the case for that. Colin Powell, by 2008, is endorsing Barack Obama. And you get the feeling Powell has become very uncomfortable with his role in the Iraq War, his role in the Bush administration, how he's going to be remembered, and how where the Republican Party has gone. And so he becomes, for all extents and purposes, a Democrat. He re-endorsed President Obama in 2012, which I think a lot of people saw as, okay, he's gone. He's not a Republican anymore. He's not on the side of the capital R right. So it's kind of a pleasant surprise to see Colin Powell not going along with this excuse from Hillary and this not having this sense of like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm totally on board with this. Yeah, whatever. We totally had that conversation. If, you know, he's not going to jump under the bus for her. He's not going to, you know, take that hit. And his, you know, if she's going to lie about him, he's going to come out and say so. If he's going to make up stories about him, he's going to call her and her allies in the media out on it. And it's kind of refreshing to see this from Colin Powell. We will see if there's any great consequence of this. But if you basically just shows Hillary and her allies will lie about everything. They will make up stories and they'll hope that you believe it if it gets her off the hook. And with any luck, she will not get off the hook. If I were Republicans, I would want Colin Powell in this comment blasted across the airwaves as much as humanly possible as soon as they finish covering Trump and Pence going to help Louisiana flood victims.
Three good martinis to close out the week. But we do have a crazy chaser because our crazy martinis on Monday and Thursday dealt with the Ryan Lochte situation. Obviously, following the time we recorded yesterday, there was much more in the way of developments. The Brazilian police came out and said, yes, the whole thing was fabricated. These guys went to a gas station and they didn't want to pay. They were thoroughly drunk, by the way. They ended up vandalizing the place and they were forced to pay for the damages in addition to, potentially to other things there. They ended up urinating all over the place instead of actually using the bathroom. There was damage to the bathroom and that sort of thing. And now we've got a Ryan Lochte apology. He wants to apologize for his behavior last weekend for not being more careful and candid in how I described the events of that early morning and for my role in taking the focus away from the many athletes fulfilling their dreams of participating in the Olympics. This is the fun paragraph. It's traumatic to be out late with your friends in a foreign country with a language barrier and have a stranger point a gun at you and demand money to let you leave. But regardless of the behavior of anyone else that night, I should have been more responsible in how I handled myself. And for that, I am sorry to my teammates, my fans, my fellow competitors, my sponsors, and the hosts of this great event. I'm very proud to represent my country. And then he goes on to talk about how he accepts responsibility for my role in this happening and have learned some valuable lessons. And then he talks about how everybody should start paying attention to the actual Olympics again. So, Jim, there may or may not have been a gun. They did have to pay. Those are about the only things that are remotely consistent, but the story was obviously completely fabricated. These guys were drunk. They roughed up potentially the security guard and damaged the gas station, and that's why they were forced to pay for damages, not because they were yanked out of a cab with a gun to Lochte's forehead and robbed outside the Olympic Village. So crazy in that this has distracted from some more great athletic performances this week. And this apology may suggest Ryan Lochte's got a future in politics because this thing is just classic.
I believe he's already looking to a position in the Clinton administration. So one thing I'm kind of left scratching my head about is, to be a very big, important crux in this story was, it was he ever held at gunpoint? Did anyone ever, you know, point a gun at him? If he did, then I'm willing to cut him some slack. Right? That's a frightening experience under any set of circumstances, and maybe he's either traumatized by it or the memory gets fuzzy or something like that. But it's pretty clear that first initial version that got out there was if not 100% BS, 70-80%? Okay. Considerable. Large chunks of this story were completely made up. And if it is this revised version of, we got into a dispute in the gas station and the security guy came at us, and all, like there's a version of events that doesn't make them look like, the old saying about Nixon, it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. If they had given accurate description of events right when it happened to the U.S. Olympic Committee and to the National Olympic Committee and to the media and all that stuff, this would not be nearly as big a deal as this is. We're clearly not going to cast Ryan Lochte in Saving Private Ryan anytime soon, because he's clearly willing to leave a man, not just a man behind, he'll leave three other men behind. I'm out of here, guys. Good luck getting out of the country, you know. And it really has turned into one of the weirder and bigger and kind of more, you know, head-scratching stories of the Olympics. I can understand why the Rio folks are furious with them. But on the other hand, let me point it out, this does distract from the actual cases of athletes being mugged and the Australians and circumstances like that. So don't complain too loudly, you know, Brazil. He did you a favor in this sense.
I think they wrap up this weekend. So we'll be back to full-time political news the rest of the time. Great. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Hope you enjoyed all three good martinis. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you Monday on the 3 Martini Lunch.